I'm living a movie, not living by rules. It's just a movie, don't lose your cool.
Yo, welcome to another episode of Spoiled Movie Reviews on the Blackout Tips Premium Podcast Network. I am your host, Rod. I am joined by Karen. What's going on?
How you doing?
Good. Glad you could be here. And we have a guest of the year, winner of the Tippy, comedian, actor, singer, podcast host of the Mundane Festival podcast, comedian Chris Lambert. What's up, man?
Thanks. Hey, what's up? You forgot to mention Cubicle Jockey as well.
Oh, yes.
I hold that down. thanks for having me, guys. I'm happy to be with y'all again.
No doubt, man. On this Sunday that the Lord has seen fit to return RG3 to his rightful place.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yes, and all of a sudden it's a controversy.
Now, of course, at Spoiler Reviews, we talk about movies that we've even seen, that either we expect the audience to have seen or to never even want to see the movie or to not care about us spoiling the movie because we spoil the movies. And this movie is top five with Chris Rock, and him and Rosario Dawson definitely get together. So, oh man, you guys really should have took that warning more seriously. But yeah, this movie is top five, by, Christopher Rock. You guys might know him, comedian extraordinaire. He stars as Andre Allen, who's a comedian who's decided to become a serious actor. And he's getting married to a reality TV star, fiance played by Dwayne Wade's husband, still in wife, Gabriel Union. And he's also being interviewed by Chelsea Brown, who's Rosario Dawson, who also happens to be the person who ghostwrites Andre Allen's biggest nemesis in the critical game. Now we keep it simple here. We talk about what we liked, what we didn't like. Then we wrap it up with a score from 0 to 5. Let's go ahead and talk about some things that we did. Like, I think there's a lot of things to like, so I'll try to like move around and we'll each like do one until we run out of things. So, I'll start with you, Karen. Give me one thing you liked about top five.
I think that, in my personal opinion, this is one of the best, Chris Rock movies that I've seen in a very long time, because Chris Rock was being himself, and we talked about this before, he wasn't acting, and I really think he executed the role very well of just naturally being himself.
Yeah, he was acting, but he knew he had a lot to draw on, because in previous movies it's been Chris Rock as an accountant or Chris Rock as, you know, the guy who is a taxi driver, and there's one where it's like, actually, he does this for a living, so I think he was able to sell a lot of scenes that, you know, maybe wouldn't have been sold before. Give me one of the things you liked about it, Chris.
I'm going to raise Karen and say this is the best thing that Chris Rock's done since Bring the Pain. I think it's just, and it's like, God, I'm just kind of echoing what Karen says, but he did some time on Broadway, and I think his acting got a lot better.
Correct.
Yeah, and it's just like the script was good. I cared about the characters, and it was just, everything you want in a movie. It's a fun, had romantic comedy, and it was just a really good time.
Yeah, man. It had a very Woody Allen-esque feel to it. I wonder if that's why he made his name Andre Allen. As a comedian,
I think you're right, because it's like they say that it's sort of like the movie Stardust Memories, where the lead character Woody Allen is a comedian that's trying to be taken seriously. So it definitely has that.
Yeah, and it had this somber, almost melancholy feel to the relationships in the movie, as far as the romance. And I feel like that's a Woody Allen staple of like the almost forlorn romance. Like, it's almost like, I guess we should be together because we're so fucked up. You know what I mean? but for me, man, one of the things I really liked about this movie was the acting that we got from Rosario Dawson and Gabrielle Union. Both of those people played their characters so well.
Yes.
And I feel like the crux of the movie really relies upon that. Like, Gabrielle Union never really breaks the character, and she's funny, but she's not playing it to be funny. You know, you end up laughing at little gags like her moving the Adam Sandler, figure from the seat at the wedding near the front. You know, stuff like that. You kind of laugh at, you know, when she does a big speech about how she sucks his dick every time she sees him, when they've been apart. Like stuff like that, but she doesn't play it for laughs. And I thought that was really cool. And then, Rosario Dawson, man, you know, she's just one of those chicks that does it for me in the pants anyway. But it's also just that she played that, so well that I really did not see the, twist of her being Nielsen.
Yeah.
Like, it really caught me off guard. And,
yes.
And, you know, after it happened, I was like, oh yeah, that's obvious. There had to be a conflict. She did mention that she's has an alias for other things. And I'm just like, fuck, she did so good that she played me. And I felt, even at the end, how they wrapped it up with her getting him to go back on stage, even that felt genuine. So hats off to both of those ladies.
I think when you think about that Gabrielle Union scene, that's kind of touches on what a lot of these reality, what I feel like maybe a lot of these reality stars feel in a way. And that scene was kind of heartbreaking. Not kind of, it was actually, where she felt like she didn't have anything to contribute. So she's just, you know, holding on to him, and it's kind of, it's sad. And that's a reality of those reality stars that you kind of, you think about sometimes, and then you just like, huh, that was something new. I wasn't expecting that. I was expecting her to be a little, I wasn't expecting her character to be as three dimensional as it was. Mm-hmm. And for me to even feel something for her, because you have to have some type of competition. And, you know, immediately I would just go with Rosario Dawson. And she's also a flawed character. These are all the three characters. They're all flawed. Mm-hmm. And you end up having, you know, some kind of, compassion for them. And that's, you know, because of the acting and because of the script, you know.
Mm-hmm. Karen, give me another thing you liked.
I liked, touching on what Chris just said, I liked the reality of it. It felt like, even though it was a movie, you literally felt like you was following his life, if that makes sense. Like, even though his character was made up and all that stuff, you felt like you got a more in-depth of his life just from his interactions with everybody around him, his interaction with his family, his interaction with the lady that was interviewing him from Times, his interaction with his father, you know, him going back to the comedy club. It's one of those things where you just felt like, and I think the biggest thing for me was the Bravo stuff, because I was like, you know what? This is about as real as it gets with a lot of that shit, because in her mind, she was like, look, I don't have a talent. You know, I'm not really anything if it wasn't for these fucking cameras and you.
Well, she said, they have to see you choose me. That was such a good line. Like, you know, like, I'm pretty much valueless unless, you know, my value is manufactured, and this is how we're gonna, you know, create this value. And Romany Malco played that role very well too, man. Cause I kept expecting there to be some like cliche, oh, they're really the ones who are sleeping together, and make her like a bad person so that we could be like, oh, see, she's actually a bad person, and that's why Chris Rock is gonna end up with Rosario Dawson, because he's dealing with someone who's just a bad person, so he just didn't see it. But no, she's not really a bad, he knew what he was getting into, he just felt like he owed her for helping him get clean.
You touch a really good point, because going back to that character being three-dimensional, you didn't see her getting him to kick the drugs and stuff. But she was there, and, you know, she's not a total she's not a total vapid person. Mm-hmm. She got him off the drugs. She said, you know, I can't do this anymore. What's the line that she said? Do you remember that line?
I will not be your audience.
Right. Exactly.
And he said, anytime someone's acting out, you can't do it without an audience. So that's what made him sober up.
Yeah.
All right. Chris, give me another thing that worked for you.
Just because this movie kind of, you know what it is for me? This movie is essentially an indie film, mm-hmm. but it's like a film that I would be excited about in general. If this was an art house movie, I would be at the, you know, small art house theater to see it. But my excitement, just rose exponentially because it's a predominantly black cast. And like, this felt like a summer blockbuster movie. And it just goes to show you how much pull Chris Rock has to have the biggest movie star right now in the country, Kevin Hart, to be in one scene. And yeah. then to just really, that he could bring all of these people together for probably not that much money to do this thing. And you see a lot of these actors in a different way. And I heard Chris Rock say, you know, he said something along the lines of, you know, he's like, this is Gabby like you've never seen her before. You've never seen Rosario Dawson like this. You clearly haven't seen Cedric the Entertainer in that way. And you know, it was just, and he said, you know, I listened to him I listened to damn near everything he was on, with the onslaught of press that they did for this movie. But he said on the Breakfast Club, you know, they were talking about his films, and he was essentially saying, you know, this is the best movie I've made. I put everything into it. And, you know, I forget the girl that's on the show, but she said, you know, I love my wife. And he said, that's great. And he said, I want more people to feel the same way about Top Five that they felt about, I Think I Love My Wife. Mm-hmm. He wants to take it to that next level. And I think that's what he did with this. Like
I actually thought it was funny. Kevin Hart's part was so funny. In the wake of the Sony leak.
Yeah.
And the role that he was playing and how he was talking. Like mm-hmm. when, like, especially the scene where he says, you know, where, Chris Rock was like, nigga, such and such. And he was like, I even emailed myself so it could be on record that I was against this movie. And he was like, he said the N word to him, and he was like, nigga, you can't be saying nigga out here in front of these white people at this job. He's like, I can get fired today. He's like, how are you black? How can you get fired? He went and closed the door and was like, nigga, I can get fired because, you know, I still work for a white person. The person that owns this shit is white. You can't be saying this shit. It was just so good and well thought out. And like you said, before we even started recording, almost felt prophetic. Like, how did he know this shit was going to happen to make it even another level of funny?
Yeah, it's just so, it's just because it's almost like it's just essentially write what you know.
Yeah.
And that's what he did. And he put his spin on it. And it was just, shit, I might try to see it again before it's out.
It's one of those rare movies. It gets funnier the more I think about it.
Yeah. And that's very rare. Yeah. And I wasn't looking for this movie to be hilarious. I was just, and I thought there were some parts that were really funny, but I just really enjoyed the characters and like everybody got to stand out and everybody had their moment. And that's hard for a movie star or star, a black star, to let everybody get their shine.
Well, like it's not just that, it's how it's played. It's played low key. It's a rated R comedy, but it's not really trying. It doesn't feel like it's begging for laughs.
Correct.
There's no, I was paying attention to see if there were the moments, where, almost like how a comedian you're trained at this point, certain jokes, you know, are going to get a laugh. You know, it's going to be about a certain amount of time and then you move on to your next joke. And I feel like movies, and especially Chris Rock's more like over the top comedy movies have always had that beat. Like, here's a gag. Did you laugh? Okay. Give you a couple seconds. Here's the next one. That doesn't happen in this. There's some very subliminal things. Like the Madea joke.
Yeah.
You know, where the Madea haunted house, where they don't even show you that it says Madea's haunted house, but you know, he just walks out and says, you know, Tyler Perry making this movie. And it's like, you know, like, it's a subtle joke. Maybe you caught that poster at the top of the screen. Maybe you didn't. After Rosario Dawson says the, thing about her, white Brad and how, you know, the tampon incident, it cuts back to both of them, and Chris Rock's not laughing. They're not looking for a laugh. They're not planning for a laugh. It just goes to the next scene. Now, you are laughing.
Yeah.
But it just didn't feel like, so what do you think? You know, it was just very, yeah. It was very, to compare it to music, it was very my dark, twisted fantasy, for me, where it's like, I no longer need your approval. I know you approve because I'm so good at what I'm doing right now. That's how this movie felt to me, the whole movie.
Well, you know, and again, like, just going back to my excitement for this movie, I think one of the things that I shouldn't have done, and then I'm kind of aiding in that right now, it's just like, for the people that haven't seen it, I was so excited about this movie that I read everything about it. So I was like, fuck, I got to see this on Thursday, because I was so excited. And then, you know, like, just reading reviews and just seeing what people say, kind of spoiling things from it. Mm. But did you notice that, like, they were saying, like, oh, there were raunchy scenes and there were gags in the movie? I didn't really see them to be that over the top.
The thing is, I don't read any movie reviews.
Nope.
I actually don't even listen to podcast movie reviews.
Until after I've seen the movie.
Unless I've seen the movie already. Right. Cause I actually do want to give my opinion first. I want to, want my opinion not to be influenced too much by other people's opinions. You know, I don't even really like ask, like, if you said you saw the movie, I won't go, so Chris, man, what'd you think of the movie? Like, give me your opinion. Like, I'll figure it out when I go see it, and then we'll have a conversation on the same level. So yeah. I personally didn't, look for anything.
Me
and
either.
Then in his interviews that he did, I really only skipped to the parts where he talked about other things, cause he's such a great interview. He doesn't really talk about just his movie.
Yeah.
He talks about so much other shit. So I just did that, man, to be honest. So the movie was fresh for me. Mm-hmm. And I do the same. I do it with everything. I'll do it with Spider-Man. It's not just Chris Rock. So, and the more excited, the less I want to know. Like, Christopher Nolan has a movie coming out. Don't tell me shit.
Nope. I won't even watch the trailers. Like, a lot of times trailers come on, and the closer it gets to the movie, a lot of times the more they show in the trailers. Christopher Nolan, you ain't gonna get shit. But you know, with other movies, they don't have control over that. So they'll just show something that's like a big twist or something in the movie. And to me, I want to go in with the clean slate. Me already knowing will kind of ruin it for me.
Yeah. Now, a thing that I liked, that I wanted to throw out there, the runtime, it's only an hour and 40 minutes. It accomplishes so much because they use all those hours and 40 minutes.
Yes, they do.
And he does a lot of one of my favorite things in movies. Show me, don't tell me.
Right.
Like, for example, when he goes to visit his family, at their, old apartment, I think it was in Brooklyn or something.
Mm-hmm.
When he gets the old bottle of whiskey from behind the heater, and picks it up, takes off the lid, sniffs it, closes it, throws it in the trash. That's a lot of storytelling. That's his secret stash that he's had before.
Yes.
That's, you know, something that no one in that house has ever found because it's so well hidden. That's how you know he's a straight up addict. He just wants the smell of it. So it tells you, like, he's still extremely tempted by this drug that basically destroyed his life before, but he still has the willpower to throw it away. And this is all done kind of while he's on the phone doing promotion for his new movie.
Yeah.
And that is so subtle. It takes 40 seconds. It tells a lifetime.
Did you get sad? I'm not going to put that on you guys. I got sad at that in the grocery store scene.
Yeah.
He's going back, you know?
Yeah. Most of us say, no, you're going to be strong. Like, I was literally like, no, he going to throw it away like he did before.
Yeah.
Most romantic comedies, you don't really give a fuck. Mm-hmm. You know?
Well, normally, because the element in most romantic comedies is not self-sabotage, it's a sabotage of a relationship.
Correct.
This was just for him. This wasn't even about like, well, no, now he won't be able to marry that vapid reality star, or now he won't be able to get Rosario Dawson. This was just like, no, I was rooting for you. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, yeah. So that's
a great observation. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a different level of stakes.
Yeah. You know what this reminded me of? Like there's this movie called Sidewalks of New York that Edward Burns did in 2001. It's almost like it's about relationships, and it's shot like almost like it's shot essentially like a mockumentary, but it had that vibe. And I remember like, I remember being a nerd back then and just being excited to see that movie in a small art house place in Northern Virginia. And I still like that took me back to being excited about this. But with this movie, and Rosario Dawson's also in that film. And I just with this, like I say it again, like I was just so it was just like a wholesome meal. Like I felt like just I felt so good seeing this movie. And like top five, it was just great. I'm sorry, guys.
No problem, man. All right, so Karen, another round of something else you like?
I liked the blackness, just the blackness in the movie. Mm-hmm. I liked the fact that the people that we were following were black. I liked the fact that it was about my culture. I liked the fact that, you know, only black people, not the white people don't, but mostly only black people have debates about top five. Mm-hmm. You know, I like them sitting in there talking to the family, because everybody has family, if you're black, that's similar to this.
Right.
You know, so I just like the blackness of it.
Especially
all.
Especially that dad.
Right. Yeah. Now that dad was a fucking buster, you know, because he basically talked shit just to get money out of him, basically.
Well, you know,
he really knows how to play shitty dads.
Yeah, and it was so funny too, because they were like, that scene was so contentious, and you're just like, what is the deal here? And he just offhandedly throws like, yeah, that's my dad. So yeah. It's like, damn, all the backstory right there. Like, just told a lifetime of shit. Didn't even need to like go back through the whole thing.
Nope.
All happened in one day.
Yeah, right. Speaking of blackness, I do want to play this clip from the movie.
I watch Erica's show every week. I can't wait to see the wedding. When you gonna bring her around here?
Soon.
That's what you said last time. And you know what? I'm still waiting on my invitation.
Hey, I'm not in charge of the guest list, okay? I'm just a groom. I'm not in charge of
tell
all this
truth,
stuff.
Tell the truth. That bitch don't like me.
No, she likes you. She asks about you.
Oh, she asks about me.
She asks about you all the time.
What'd she say?
She said, how your big friend doing?
My big... Is that what that bitch think about me? I'm big like that? For real?
I'm
that's
saying.
That Hollywood Andre. That's that Hollywood
playing, I'm just playing.
But I ain't got my invitation.
Well, because they figured we could, you know,
Andre,
the hotel you right and now. The airfare. Everybody's coming to the bachelor party, right?
I want to. General Tao over here.
I said no, because he don't know how to come home and making it rain. We need our ones.
So... yeah, speaking of the blackness, like scenes like that with mm-hmm. the old, almost all the black SNL alone,
mm-hmm.
Was just so funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That really meant something to me. Just the blackness. I mean, because we've seen blackness on screen in various different ways, but this is one of the ones where I was like,
well, cool. It's not overt. It's very like, it's not. Look at these black people. Isn't it funny that how black people are?
Yeah, yes, you know, I didn't get that feeling. Yeah.
It was just kind of like, you know.
Here's a family that happens to be black.
Right. Correct. What about you, Chris? You got any other things you want to add?
I mean, just the like what Karen said again, it's just the black, it was good. It's like, thank God for this movie. Thank God for, right now, like I said it on my podcast, just thank God for Chris Rock and Bill Burr to just with his special that came out. Just like with the place where comedy is with Cosby and stuff, you know, it's just really refreshing. It's something that we needed. It's a film that, you know, thank God, even as much as I love Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, like we really had a black movie this year.
Mm-hmm.
And it was good. Also Beyond the Lights, you know, that got overlooked.
Yeah. I heard that was great.
It was really good, man. It's just like, you know, I caught myself getting emotional a couple times in that movie, but, it was just, you know, it was just good to see black people on screen. And like we were talking about before the show, you know, you kind of get tired of seeing, you know, why can't we have a black before sunrise, before sunset? You know, because it's in the same vein as the Linkletter movies, all this stuff happening in one day. And it's just good to see, and it's good to see Chris Rock put everything he had into this movie.
Yeah, I would even contend that it's not really a black movie. It's just a really good movie, and it happens to be done by a black person. You know what I mean? Like, where it, like, very little of this movie is like, and this is how black people do.
Correct.
It's just very much like matter of fact. It's kind of like how I talk about, our podcast. I don't want our podcast to become explaining black people to white people. Like, I don't like that shit.
That's a turnoff to me.
Right. It's not like white people do that shit for us. You know,
they
like,
don't. They don't care. You either listen or you don't.
Yeah. It's like the double dutch scene, right? You either hop in or you don't, right?
Right.
So I felt like that's how this movie was, you know, let's not try to turn everything into a stereotype or a, hey, what's the black version of alcoholism? You know what I mean? Like, it was just, oh yeah, yeah, guy has a problem with alcohol, you know? There's some characters that may feel stereotypical, but it never felt like that was the point of the movie. So, now I'm going to run down a bunch of stuff that I like. Feel free to chime in, guys, because, you know, we need to wrap it up in a second. Yeah,
I got some more stuff too.
DMX cameo.
Yes, I got that on my list. I enjoyed that because I didn't see that coming.
I did not. And I love how they told the story with the flashback. Cause he's like, cause she, you know, it's almost the end of the movie. He's like, she's like, so what did it? And he's like, well, that and jail. And she's like, jail. And they cut back to him telling the stories. Like, I heard the growl.
Yes, and it came out of nowhere. I was like, what the fuck is that?
Yeah.
And that's how I fucked up by reading too many reviews.
Oh. So
I was kind of like, when is it coming?
Oh, no. Well.
Yeah. The moment still wasn't ruined, but, you know, I would have liked to have been surprised.
Dude, my whole audience went crazy.
Right. The whole theater just busted out laughing because nobody seen that coming out the blue.
Yeah, he said I heard growling, and I was like, so is like someone a really big Hammy fan? Does Hammy growl? the Uprise movie clips that he had.
Right.
And just the idea of it. When he goes on Opie and Anthony, and Anthony, of course, asks him, like, why would you make this movie with all these white people getting killed?
Uh-huh.
And then juxtaposed with Sway asking him, you know, how many white people end up dying? He's like 50,000. And Sway's like, how many you kill on screen? He said, oh, about 3,000 to 5,000. He's like, that's it?
All?
I was like, oh man. I just love that, you know, those scenes. Cause, the way he told the story, jumping forward and backwards in time,
mm-hmm.
was really cool. You know, the argument that takes place because his, fiance puts an extra piece of jewelry into the ring set.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and they show that he's obviously pissed, and then they go back just a little bit and show you, like, here's the conversation that took place, you know?
Yeah, the editing, that part of the story, just technically, that was good, too. Like, I just saw a movie today that I really enjoyed, appreciated the editing, because it also added another layer to the film, and that's what it did here, just how smooth they went in and out of it. And the passage of time, going back in time, like especially the scene where he goes, the sequence where he's in Houston, just like that's another part of the film that's just like, in my opinion, is the centerpiece. But
It's so masterfully done.
Yeah.
And my man Cedric just stole the show out of that scene. Not like
he did.
He stole even Bruce with the hair. Like, they just stole that scene.
I just wish they didn't, I'm sorry guys, I wish they didn't show that scene, mm-hmm. like they didn't show the hangar part, you know? They show too much, they give too much away from the trailers these days.
That's the biggest reason why I try my best to stay away from, I see the initial one because that's when they get the least amount, after that I tap out.
Well, here's the problem, I didn't have a problem with that, and here's why. The movie's rated R. Mm-hmm. And there was very few jokes they could show in the trailer. I was paying attention throughout the movie because anytime a comedy's rated R, I always have like my antenna up for like, you know, like, this trailer doesn't seem that funny. But there's a good chance they just couldn't show you the funny shit.
Correct.
You know? And so, like, that is the cleanest joke you can show of Cedric in the movie.
Yeah. Right.
There's no other joke. I was paying attention. It's, I'm the motherfucking man in Houston. You know what I mean? It's, right. You know, they did show you the part where he asked him about, did he want some scissor or some drink or something? Those are the only parts where he's either not cussing or fucking. So.
Correct.
I was okay with those jokes because to me, they weren't his funniest jokes. And they were funny enough to let me know the movie was funny when he's like, oh, they on to your boy. I was like, okay, well, Seth's going to get to do his thing in this. So I was okay with that. Let me see what else. Gabby Sidibe and JB Smooth's Big Woman Fetish.
Oh, you love them big women. And I did love all the, it was a lot of big women that probably normally in like a regular movie wouldn't have got a goddamn shot. But these women was out there rolling hard. I was like, every time I seen a big woman, I was looking for him.
Yeah. JB Smooth was doing, he was cooning good, as they would say on Hot Firestarter.
Think he was cooning?
Yeah, he was cooning real good. Jerry Seinfeld doing essentially still maintaining his clean, like, talk, you know, like he doesn't curse or anything.
No, but it's,
but he was so dirty in this movie.
And it was just hilarious.
He was so dirty. It was, and it was so good to see him, like, you know, do that, you know, like, when he's arguing with the stripper at the end where he's like, he's like, she's got my wallet. And he's like, well, she's like, well, I had a wallet. I don't even have clothes on. He's like, do I have to say it? You know, you know, he gives his top five at the end, like all that stuff with him.
Toss some money in there. Toss some hundreds in the air.
Yeah. Even Adam Sandler, I laughed at some of the shit he got to do, you know, since he's been doing those, bullshit movies over at Sony that they don't even like.
He's been cooning, man. He's been cooning for a long time.
Yes, so much.
I feel like he doesn't have to do it.
It's like
you kind of have talent. Like, just like, even like the artsy films like Punch Drunk Love. And I'm one of the few comedians that enjoyed a lot of funny people.
Yeah.
But it was just sort of like, I like Adam Sandler. And so it's just when you see anybody that you like, mm-hmm. and they're kind of doing stupid shit, it's like, why are you doing this?
Yeah, because, well, you know what it is? It's anybody you like that has the talent not to have to do it.
Right.
Yeah.
He don't have to do it. He just kept, at some point, the money was too good, and he was just like, man, fuck it. I'm cooning hard, and I'm making money, and my friends are hanging out. I mean, it's a good life.
Yeah.
It's not good art.
No, it's not. That's why, I don't like Tyler Perry, but Adam Sandler and Tyler Perry fall in that same category to me.
Well, you know what I say. He's a Jewish Tyler Perry. I also wanted to say, the way they treat fame in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Love it. It's very understated, constantly in the background. And just, it made the city of New York feel like a real place. Cause, you know, it was very much like, even with him being famous, people weren't that fucking impressed.
Nope.
That they were, it was kind of, it was.
They don't give a shit. Like.
Yeah. It was, you know, there's like a white woman that's like, oh, can I get, a picture? And, a fucking, JB Smooth's like, no. And then she's like, well, fuck you then. And like, keeps going.
And when they got hit, how everybody immediately opened up doors and left. I was like, what the fuck is happening?
Yeah. Very small. Like I said, they do so much showing and not telling. In this movie, that it really is, it's really a masterpiece, man. I hate to get too inflammatory or hyperbolic, but I really do believe that it's a masterpiece, man.
You sicing it young.
I'm sicing it young. I gotta do it, man.
I really
don't want to be a Bama about it, but,
I'll be a Bama about it. I also like the boyfriend, her boyfriend.
Oh yeah, white, Brad.
Yeah, because I was kind of like Chris Rock. I thought Brad was black too. Mm. And then Brad walked around. I was like, oh, so that's Brad. Cause his facial expression was like, that's Brad. I was looking, oh, that's Brad too.
And she was kind of judging him and his life through her questions and their interview the whole time. Like, it was a bit of a hostile interview to a large extent. Yeah. So then when her life starts falling apart in front of him, it's almost like, well, how does it feel? You know what I mean? Like, here's somebody getting a peek inside your bullshit, and you're not as well put together as you portray. You know, how, like, cause he almost enjoyed that moment when he's making the laugh jokes and like, it is funny, and he kind of got her to open up. Like, that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I also enjoy like the comedic mind, which, like I said, I'm not a stand up comedian or anything like that, but, I do have very fucked up inner dialogue all the time. And that's why I'm not really friends with a lot of people, cause, you know, not everybody will allow for that in casual conversation. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you have to be around certain people that kind of, it's almost like it's a subculture type thing. Like hanging out with my comedian friends, I can't say the same thing that I'm thinking when I'm talking to, you know, civilian. But, and it, you made me think one of my favorite scenes is the stand up scene when he goes to the Comedy Cellar.
Right.
And like after he does, like it's just, it kind of reminded me of an episode of like, you know, kind of like Louis a bit, but it was just when he realizes that he still got it.
Yeah.
And you could see that he's going to probably like Andre's going to say, oh, I got stand up and I'm funny.
Right.
Like just went down. And I say this every time I talk about Chris Rock on the show, but I got to see him, at the Stress Factory here in New Jersey. I want to say like earlier this summer, when he was working on, he did that 9/11 joke that he did on SNL, and he did some of his stuff that he was doing at the BET Awards. Mm-hmm. But just looking at this guy that's turning 50 soon, he's accomplished so much stuff, and looking at, I was up pretty close, and I'm looking at his eyes, and just the fire, the passion that he had in his eyes was just like amazing. Like this guy that's already achieved this stuff, you can tell that he still loves stand up, and he was just, mm-hmm. he did an hour and a half, and it was one of the first shows that he's had done in a long time,
right.
With outside of doing spots around the city. But he was just like, yo, he's like, I got these jokes, man. And like, he was very honest and like vulnerable about it. He's just like, I got these jokes.
Yeah. I loved it, man. You could feel that in that last scene when he's like, I could feel, you know, he's like, how do you feel? I feel insane. You know, like he really sold that, so well. Let's see, was there anything else I was going to throw in there?
While you're looking, one thing that mm-hmm. I really enjoyed about the movie, which kind of played in the background, the bear in the bear suit, just a whole...
Hammy?
Yes, just a whole concept of Hammy. And just when he was telling her, hey, every time I did some shit, I was fucked up. I never did it sober.
Yeah.
And it was just one of those things where, you know, he made billions of dollars... And nobody even seen his motherfucking face. And he pointed that out. He was like, I'm not doing nothing with the motherfucking bear because people don't see my face.
Even the red shirt.
Right.
Where he's like, they want you to wear a red shirt. And he's like, why? Because they can't tell me apart in a sea of niggas getting off this plane. Like, you know, and then like a very subtle nod to that, when he was getting ready to go out for his bachelor party, he had the red shirt on a hanger.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I just resigned myself to this fate. Let me put on the red shirt. Let me show up to the fucking bachelor party.
And he looked so unhappy. Like, doing that whole scene, I was like, well, if they're going to show this on Bravo, you just look like this is the last place you really want to be.
Yeah, he was just doing it to get out of trouble at that point.
Correct.
You know?
And it's like Whoopi Goldberg told him in the scene, like, you got to be into the guy and not into the girl and not into the wedding. Like, she wasn't into the guy. She was into the wedding.
Yes, man. So, all that shit, man, they just knocked it out the park. Let's talk about what we didn't like about the film. Karen?
I don't have anything that I did not like about the movie.
All right. That's fine. Chris?
I think it's just more on me. I shouldn't have OD'd on all the coverage about the movie, and I would have had an even more of an enjoyable experience than I already did. That's all.
I think for me, the things I didn't like were, I hated that they threw in the JB Smoove, like, street harassment shit. I felt like they probably could have found another way to work in that he's into these big women without making it so, like, every time I see a big woman, I'm gonna say something like,
okay, yeah,
you know, I thought it took me out of the movie a little bit. And then, and when they had the scene with Gabby, Sidibe, it proved that they didn't even have to do it that way. You know what I mean? Like, they had the stripper at the end, they had Gabby Sidibe, then he made the comment about Rosario Dawson, like, she kind of skinny for my taste. So, you know, they could have done it without having him do the, like two or three, just big woman walking down the street moments. although I did like it as a running gag because it escalated. The scene where Chris Rock sends him home and the woman comes up to him and is like,
right,
confronts him like that
in the background.
Yeah, just in the background, very subtly, but that was very good. Let's see, what else was it? There was one more thing. There was that. I don't remember the other thing now. I wish we could have spent a little time, just a little bit more time with Gabrielle, Union's world.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I kind of wanted to see him more like dealing with that world to show that he really wasn't with it, but maybe they felt like that would have been overkill or something. Cause the movie's damn near perfect. So I don't know, you know, maybe that would fuck up the whole vibe, but I kind of want
that scene though, man. Damn if she didn't nail that.
She nailed that shit, man. Mm-hmm. You know, and they had a bunch of background scenes, like when he calls her and she's getting her hair done and she's like, I can't get him to do this, but I'll get him to do more bachelor party stuff. And, you know, I could have used a little bit more of that. That's really about it, man. So, as we get ready to wrap this thing up and score from 0 to 5, let me first ask, who's your top five, Chris?
My top five, Black Thought, Mos Def, Q-Tip, Common, and Fonte.
So not The Roots, just Black Thoughts in particular.
Just Black Thought. I think, people say that Rakim is the greatest. I think Black Thought kind of took the banner and did his thing with it. I think he's the best MC to ever breathe on a microphone.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. That is high praise, man.
Yeah.
And you know what's crazy about Black Thought? We don't really know anything about that dude's life.
Exactly. And you know, like, I would say Q-Tip is one of the first MCs that I sort of fell in love with, because he had this everyman quality. And when you think a lot about Black Thought, Mos Def, and Common, in some ways, we were kind of talking about this when we were in Durham last year with Fonte, and just saying like how some of these guys are so great that you don't know anything about them, and then they're kind of like these rap deities, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And then to me, like, Fonte has that everyman quality. It's kind of like Q-Tip too, but Fonte kind of just took that to another level where it's just like, you know, I'll pick you up in my Porsche, psych. You know, I got a Nissan that I'm still paying for, still got my lease on. You know, he was able to show, you know, not saying he's the only rapper to ever do that shit, but in a way, like, he could hang with Black Thought on a track. Mm. Like, The Day on How I Got Over, that album, how, like, he's closing out a song that Black Thought led off on. He's doing a song with Pharoah Monch on his own album and still didn't get blown out of the water and still might have sounded better than Pharoah Monch on that record.
Mm-hmm.
Or like a guy that just kind of, I think he's one of the greats, and he kind of fathered all of this sing-song shit that some of these rappers are doing right now that are making people more famous than he is. That's how I feel, guys.
Well, we appreciate that. Now, Karen, from 0 to 5.
But I said, you ain't gonna, I'm not gonna.
Did you want to give your top five?
Yes, that's what I was judging.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, and like I said, and for me, mine varies. Honestly, depend on who I'm listening to and what mood I'm in. But my top five, like right now at this time, is Jay-Z, Kanye, Logic, Kendrick, Biggie, and honorable mention is Andre 3000.
Wow, so you giving Logic already off of one album your top five? That's crazy.
And like I said, it varies. Like for my shit, it kind of bounces around to what I'm listening to at that period of time. And that's, and I'm really, his album, is, and people may agree, disagree, and that's because I don't listen, maybe not listen to as much rap as like you or Brandon or some of y'all do, but for me, it's been high in my rotation. Like, it's one of the few albums this year that I can play and I don't skip it. I never skip a track, ever. And that's rare for me. I put it on play and I just let
Well, I'm not disputing that the album's good. I'm just saying, he's already a top five after one album is for you. Like, you've only heard one album. Is.
Yeah. And that's it. Like I said, and that can change. Who knows? Something else to come out. That top five would vary. Like, okay. I, when people go of all times, that's a very hard list for me because there's so many people that you've come in contact and listened to over, or just over your years of life that it, you know, it bounces up and down and varies. But for me, as of right now, these are the people that I kind of listen to the most.
Well, obviously my top five, Silk the Shaka.
Boo. Boo.
Magoo.
No, that's your top low.
That's your bottom five. All right. My bad. My top five, Bill Cosby.
Oh Lord, this list is getting worse. What's happening here?
He did have a rap album, didn't he? A rap song or something?
I don't know. I think I'd go Jay-Z.
Yeah, his is The Art of Rape.
All right, stop cutting me off. I say I go Jay-Z, Kanye, Tribe, Biggie. It's tough between Rakim and Eminem, man. Rakim and then Eminem as my six man. All right, man. 0 to 5, Karen.
Oh, what's a 5?
All right. Fuck you waiting for to go see this shit. What about you, Chris?
Cinco.
Cinco. all right. We'll see you. Gracias to see you at Lunas. For me also, I would have to give it a 5, man. It's definitely, and not just for a comedy, it's like in a year for me where I loved a lot of movies. Like it was not a lot of middle of the ground. I loved a lot of movies and I hated a lot of movies.
Correct. Like me.
This movie sticks out on the list near the top. I'd say it's definitely in my top 5 for the year. And we'll see how we finish out. We got a few more weeks to go. But could easily slide into be the top 5 movie for 2014 for your boy. So make sure you guys check out Chris, the Mundane Festival on Twitter. He's at Chris Lamberth. And if you're in Myrtle Beach, be on the lookout for him around the last week of December, man.
December 26th through the 31st.
There you go. So what are you gonna say, Chris? Go ahead.
At the Comedy Cabana in Myrtle Beach.
There you go, man. So make sure you do it. This has been a long episode, but it was well fucking worth it because this movie was that great. Mm-hmm. Go see the movie. We'll talk to you guys later. Peace.
Get your act together. My life's a movie. I leave you in that act forever.
My life's like a movie. My life's like a movie. My life's like a movie.